Finance, Government and the Law. Henry VIII's seizure of church lands and properties was an element in the evolution of the money system. The Reformation speeded up the processes whereby the common people lost rights over lands owned in common and managed locally under common law. As the familiar jingle has it, they hang the man and flog the woman who steals the goose from off the common, but let the greater villain loose that steals the common from the goose. After this point in time, the Tudor monarchs and the Stuarts who followed them contended with the rise of Parliament, of powerful individuals who sought worldly power, paying only lip service to notions of good, fair, honest government. Although, of course, the history books tell it differently. The common people were kept in order by standing armies of militia. By the time of William and Mary, the monarch was becoming a constitutional monarch who ruled in name only. The powerful merchants and landowners behind the scenes drew up the terms of the Bank of England to secure William, their protege, on the throne of England and Ireland. This was the key development in the history of modern times, and it happened as follows. By the 17th century, it had become established practice that the king sought the necessary finance to wage a war. Money had to be found to pay soldiers, to pay sailors, to equip ships and provide arms and ammunition. But the wars were costing more than the kings could afford from their personal private resources. And what's more, parliaments were reluctant to grant taxes to a king with whom they disagreed. So the Stuarts went to the goldsmiths for loans. When these loans were not repaid, the goldsmiths had to carry the loss. Some were ruined, and the rest resolved never to let that situation happen again. At this point, the London goldsmiths and merchants, who supported the accession of William of Orange, proposed that the financing of wars be taken out of the king's hands altogether. William needed £1,200,000 immediately in order to finance his war against Louis of France. And so, in 1694, an act was passed through Parliament establishing the Bank of England. The 1694 Act allowed a small number of merchants to collect for the king the sum of £1,200,000 necessary to fight the war. This is the origin of the national debt. The king agreed to pay interest at 8% to those who subscribed the money. To secure the loan, that is, the payment of the interest and the long-term repayment of the debt, the Act allowed Parliament to impose taxes on beer and ale and vinegar. From these taxes, a sum of £100,000 was to be kept back to pay the interest. The subscribers formed one corporate body, that is, in law, they formed a joint stock company, a company owned jointly by all its shareholders. Up to this point in time, the key institution in the economy was the household. The farms and guilds that comprised the real economy in medieval times were based on individual households. In law and in practice, these households determined what was produced, how it was produced, and who was entitled to benefit from the production. Where trade was the primary object of production, one or two households might form a partnership. But from this time forward, we see the emergence of the firm or corporate company formed primarily to seek to profit financially from the productive enterprise. Developments in economic practice were backed by the force of law. Thus, the mid-19th century saw the rise of the limited liability company, a company with a distinct legal personality. The Bank of England was called into existence by the force of law. Although it was a private venture, it was backed by government, hence trusted by the people, and supported from taxation. Finance was the driving force behind the new technologies of the Industrial Revolution. It operated quietly behind the scenes, driving revolutionary changes in the relationship between humanity and its life support systems on the earth itself, and all under the full force of law. The speed with which these changes took place was breathtaking. 100 years ago, there were no radio broadcasts. News still travelled by word of mouth and in printed form, in local and national newspapers. Radio broadcasts started in the 1920s, after the First World War. A century ago, there was an elementary telephone network just forming. No television, no internet, no mobile phones, no network of electromagnetic communications saturating the earth and the air, so that in the very near future our very bodies can be permanently wired up to the Internet of Things. It is less than 200 years since the Battle of Waterloo. News of Napoleon's defeat travelled by the then swiftest and most reliable means, the Rothschilds' private postal system. Communications between the six men of the Rothschild family covered the whole of Europe at the time. And how did their news travel? It travelled in the form of handwritten messages, albeit in code, taken by horsepower overland and by wind-powered sailing ships over the sea. The facts are spelled out on the dust jacket of the biography of the Rothschild family, published in 1928 by Victor Gollancz. The book, The Rise of the House of Rothschild by Count Corti, unravels the tangled threads of international finance and diplomacy with a masterly hand. The activities of the Rothschilds early in the 19th century are depicted in detail, and they include a quote from the book cover. "It is scarcely credible that the Rothschild family, which played such an important, even a decisive part in the history, not only of Europe, but of the world during the 19th century, should have been practically ignored by historical writers of repute." The work of Nathan Rothschild in Manchester and London, and of James in Paris, the Rothschilds' methods for the wholesale smuggling of English goods to the continent, the Rothschilds' handling of English subsidies to the Allies. Nathan Rothschild enables Wellington to continue the war in Spain. Financial relations of the Rothschilds to the governments of England, Austria, Prussia and Russia. Development of the Rothschilds' private postal system, which finally covered the whole of Europe and was used by friendly governments for forwarding confidential documents. It is all there, printed on the dust jacket of the book. And inside the book itself, the story of the rise of Rothschild was published in 1928. To sum up the situation, the last 200 years have seen the development of a world economy designed to wage war against the planet and its people, to bring Mordor to every corner of the earth, to every shire and every locality. And the whole operation is directed by the power of finance. At present, the three spheres of the social order, the cultural, including education, the political and the economic, are all subject to finance. The next talk explores the implications of this observation.